It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions.
Touchdown, San Diego!
Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Monday? We do. From our Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center studios in San Diego, we welcome you to our Monday bonus podcast, Hacksaw's Headlines. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, along with my co-host, John Riley. We welcome you. Coming off a great sports weekend, we have a ton of topics on the table. Our talk show, our podcast, is brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers. 9 stores to serve you in San Diego, regardless of what the project is. In the house, outside on the patio, near the pool, or even for your business, when you need ideas, you need help, you need product, you need Dixie Line Lumber. And our podcast also brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We will all need help with our eyes sometime down road. With eye exams, special treatment, analysis of where you are, when that time comes, think North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. John Riley, coming off a great sports weekend with a ton of stories and a lot of really interesting things right there when the sun comes up in the next couple of days in the world of sports. This will be fascinating. But before we get started, let's remind everybody that as part of our live stream on our Monday and Thursday podcast about how we open it up right at the end for what we call Fans Forum.
Yeah, Fans Forum. This is your chance to get involved. If you have a question or comment for Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, you know, you can drop it in the live chat. But today, we're just going to focus on our social media friends for our Fans Forum segment. So make sure you tune in at the very end of this podcast.
And a reminder, if you like sports, check my website right there. That's the address on the top, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. I write on it every day. First thing every morning, you'll have every story. It'll be delivered to you. And by the way, when you check the podcast, we invite you to join our new thing, Hacksaw's Insiders Group.
Yeah, Hacksaw's Insiders Group. It's your chance to be part of the club, part of the team. Go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com. That orange box in the upper right corner. Sign up. Put your email there. Join our list. You'll get the best 15 minutes in sports just about every weekday, plus a whole lot of other things we have planned for the new year.
And a reminder, we've been doing this for about 15 months. We're about to punch through the 5,000 subscriber mark, and that's a pretty good accomplishment. So we want you to share with all the people in your address book. Tell them who we are and what we do, and subscribe. If you've yet to subscribe, you do that, you immediately will get all types of information via email. You'll get notifications the minute we post something on our YouTube channel, which is a lot of the different days of the week. John, let's get started because we got an intriguing couple of days ahead of us in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting into the thick of it here in spring training.
Cactus League. Cactus League notes Padres, Dodgers, Angels. And what's interesting, Padres, Dodgers leave the Cactus League at midweek and they go to Seoul, South Korea. They will each play some exhibition games against Korean and Japanese teams. And then the following week on the 20th, Major League Baseball starts early. Padres, Dodgers plan for real. That'll be April 20th and 21st in Seoul, South Korea. Where we sit with the Padres right now, I think they've gotten a lot of answers to spring training. Joe Musgrove just came through a 60-pitch B-game appearance on the mound. There have been no physical setbacks. He had the 2 really rocky outings in the Cactus League when he didn't get out of the first inning of either. Since then, he's thrown 2 back lot games, B-games, and has pitched pretty well. In addition, Yuki Matsui has now thrown 2 since he had the back spasms. No setback there. I would think maybe he gets a chance to throw hot batting practice this week. When they go to South Korea at the exhibition games, I would assume both Matsui and Woo-Suk Go are going to be able to pitch in those exhibition games. Adrian Morione has not given up a run this spring.
Nice.
And I think, John, he's just about vaulted himself right into the mix as an insurance policy guy. Michael King continues to ramp up. The New York Yankee pitcher has really solidified his slot there. And, of course, they leave. They're going to go play the Dodgers. And here's the unique facet to the schedule. We have talked extensively about the concern about Darvish, coming off the elbow issue. Musgrove coming off the shoulder capsule issue. Well, nobody's going to ask those guys to go 6 or 7 innings the first series against the Dodgers. But the unique aspect of this whole structure, it's almost as if all hands on deck for the first 2 regular season games against the Dodgers, which means kind of a semi-bullpen day.
Mm-hmm.
So they ask Darvish and Musgrove to go 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever, and then everybody else jumps in. Why? Because when they come back, they have 8 more days of spring training games, 8 more days to rest the arms that pitched against the Dodgers in Seoul, South Korea, and then ramp it up, get it scheduled for when the rest of the season kicks into gear. So it's kind of unique. Early start to the season, you'd be scared about that. But the back end after the Dodgers series, they're going to have all time to reset, hit the button on their starting rotation. That's kind of fascinating. So, Cactus Lee, give me your quick response to the Padres situation.
Well, that works out really well, doesn't it, Lee? I mean, you could, you know, essentially have Darvish. Lee, is he going to be the opening day starter?
We believe so. Either he or Musgrove. I'm not sure that that's been finalized, but that'll be finalized once they get to Seoul, South Korea.
But then they can reset the starting rotation. So 8 days later, it can be, you know, Musgrove and Darvish again, right?
Yep.
And then we don't have to throw some of those young kids into the fire quite yet. I love the news on Adrian Morejon. I mean, it would be great to get some value back from that guy. He's a legit starter. He's a lefty, too, which they could really use.
So that's where we are with Padre baseball. I think in the big picture, even though it's a sub-500 record in the Cactus League, they've gotten answers. Now, have they sorted out what's gone on in center field? No, not yet. But nobody needs to make a final decision. Sidebar story to that, they will take 31 players to South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to announce who's the 26 until the night before the first game against the Dodgers. So they'll take 31, they'll sort out extra pitching or extra outfielders or super bench guys, and then they'll name 26 for opening day. And then they'll come back and they can reset, hit that button again 8 days later when the rest of the National League schedule kind of kicks into gear. So that's the latest on the Padres. Cactus League update, Camelback Ranch Dodgers. I don't know if I should be concerned. I don't know if you should be concerned. Maybe an L.A. Dodger fan might be concerned. This late into spring training, the Dodgers have moved Mookie Betts to shortstop.
Yeah, wow.
He has not played shortstop ever in professional baseball. Last time he played, he was in high school. This is because Gavin Lux has developed a case of the yips.
Uh-oh.
He can't throw to first base without bouncing it. All of a sudden, his mechanics are flawed. This is a shocker because this was a kid who progressed through the minor leagues, played a lot of different positions. Initially came up as a second baseman. He hit. They put him at shortstop. Then he got hurt. This is really weird. Now, they've flip-flopped. Mookie Betts is going to shortstop. And Dave Roberts said, this is not just a trial. This is for indefinite period going forward. Lux has been moved to second base. But if he's got the yips at short, is he going to have the yips at second? Might he be going back to the minor leagues? There's something not right. Because I watched one game. He bounced 4 throws to Freddie Freeman.
From second?
No, from short.
From short, okay.
And he was off the mark. I mean, way off the mark. I mean, there's something not correct right now. And to me, it might be this. I don't think it's this.
No.
And the minute I saw it, I said, holy cow. Do you know who Steve Blass was?
Pittsburgh Pirate pitcher? Yeah, Pittsburgh Pirates, yeah.
Really good pitcher in the 70s. He got the yips and it was the end of his career. He couldn't throw strikes.
Right.
He's one of the voices of the Pirates on TV right now. He's had a nice career. But that came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, his career was over. He could not throw strikes. And the minute I saw this thing with Lux, I said, wow. And what complicates it is the Dodger infield has got some problems on the left side. Max Muncy is not there for his glove at third base. He's there because of his bat, home run ability. So suddenly, the left side of the Dodger infield really looks shaky. That's why Mookie Betts has been moved. So that was really a surprise story. They do have an insurance policy. Ex-Miami Marlin, Miguel Rojas, a lot of age on him, did hit once upon a time, still got athletic ability to slide side to side, has not hit much last couple of years. He could play there. Super utility guy, Chris Taylor could play there. Kiki Hernandez could go there. But this is really strange. Good news on the pitching staff. Walker Buehler, who they were going to hold back for at least a month, try to preserve him so that he'd be there towards the end of the season. There's going to be an innings limit on him after the second elbow surgery. He just threw a 40-pitch batting practice session at the end of this past week, and he was bringing the heat.
Oh, really?
He was clocked at 95.
Good for
him.
He's
had no physical setbacks. Bad news, M. Sheehan, a young rookie who pitched pretty well in an emergency situation the back half of last schedule. He's got shoulder issues. It looks like he's going to the disabled list to start the season. And let me ask you this. I'll put a question mark next to the rotation. We obviously know, John, the Dodgers situation with the injury factor. Buehler probably won't be ready to start the first month. Dustin may not be here till July 1. No Clayton Kershaw till August 1. No Tony Gonsolin for the entire season. The Dodger rotation is Tyler Glasnow and the big paycheck coming from Tampa. James Paxton, former Mariner Red Sox, coming off 2 years of injuries. Yash Yamamoto, who had one really dazzling start and then one awful start in spring training. And then the kids, Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone. So, I mean, there's a lot of new faces here, and a couple of guys have some question marks wrapped around them in the Dodger rotation. So that's the Dodger headline. John Reilly, even if your opinion's from left field, please tell me your thoughts on Betts, your thoughts on the third baseman who's there for his bat, not his glove, and suddenly your thoughts about, is this the right Dodger rotation?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think Betts is just an amazing athlete, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy who can bowl 300, you know, he's a great athlete. So I think he's going to be okay. He'll be serviceable at short. The whole yips thing reminds me. I remember Steve Sachs had that problem. And then Mike Ivey, I think, did back in the Padres.
The catcher.
And was it Mickey Sasser, I think, or Mackie Sasser, whatever his name was with the Mets. I think he had the yips once before. But you figure Gavin Lux is coming off that injury, you know, and he's trying to be the heir apparent there for shortstop, and maybe again it's mental, right? It's all that weight on their shoulders, you know. So, but going around the horn there, Turner at third, or no, it's not Turner, it's Muncy. But he's still, he only hits like what, 220. I mean, the guy, he has power, but
it does pop.
But Chris Taylor is a very versatile player, you know, and he could play infield, outfield. He could play really almost seven positions. So I think they're going to be okay. Kike, of course, he's very mobile and flexible as well. The rotation, though, was funny. You know, we posted that video about the pitching looking weird, you know, on Instagram and on YouTube. And, man, the fans came pouring out and they're like, Hacksaw, what are you doing? You're analyzing spring training games. What are you doing? You know, it's going to be fine. You know, we got Glass now. We got this guy. We got that guy. Just, you know, calm down, relax. And, oh, by the way, what kind of pitchers do the Padres have going? So, you know, the smack talking is already starting.
Okay. Third team we're talking about in the Cactus League, the Angels. This story is not going away. This story has legs on it. The Angels have now talked to Blake Snell personally, have talked to Scott Burrows three times in 3 weeks. The Angels supposedly might be back in the running for Blake Snell. But again, there's always asterisks anytime you have a conversation with Scott Burrows. The price tag on the Angels is they're offering, I was told, 3 years, $90 million total. $30 million, which is the average salary that would put Blake Snell in the upper echelon of Major League Baseball. But Scott Burrows always responds, you make me an offer, you're going to negotiate against yourself, John Reilly.
Right.
So Scott Burrows says, opt-outs. I want opt-outs. Wait a minute. The Angels are giving you $30 million per year, and by virtue of signing him, if they were to sign him, they have to forfeit the second and fifth round draft picks they own because the Padres gave him a qualifying offer.
Yeah.
Any team that signs Blake Snell has got to give up a 2 and a 5. Now, the Angels don't have luxury tax problems, so they could afford $30 million. But the Angels' response to Scott Burrows is, I'm going to pay him $30 million in the first year, and he could walk the second and third year, and I lose my draft picks?
Yeah.
That's not a good business decision. So there's these negotiations that are going on. I still think they desperately need a frontline guy at the edge of that rotation to complement everybody else. I mean, if I told you the Angels are going to go to opening day with Reed Detmers as a number one, Griff Cannon as a number two, Patrick Sandoval as a number three. Granted, they got a whole bunch of rental one-year guys in the bullpen that might be okay. Is that enough pitching? Or with Snell at the front end of that rotation, working with Detmers and with Canning and with Sandoval, it sure make them a much better team on the mound. And then, of course, Trevor Bauer is still out there in the solar system. I don't know if you heard this story. Bauer this weekend is pitching in Arizona. Bauer is part of a traveling Japanese team of former Japanese guys or free agent guys who are trying to earn a minor league contract. He is pitching at Camelback Ranch for this, quote, you know, backlot Japanese touring team. He still wants to pitch in Major League Baseball. So you got Trevor Bauer's out there. Obviously, at the front is Blake Snell. So give me your assessment of Halo Baseball.
Well, the starters you just named, those top three guys, I'm like, who? You know, that is a non-serious starting rotation.
I won't say it's the worst rotation in baseball only because the Oakland Athletics are in the American League West.
Yeah.
But that being said, these guys have been competitive. But there's no star there.
No.
Detmers is a former number one pick who's pitched pretty well. I think his ERA was in the mid-threes, which is good. Sandoval is a left-hander who's evolved. Canning came off surgery, I think, 2 years ago. Very credible last year. I think his ERA was 3.47. But there's no frontline ace there. They are just because the Lord says you have to have 13 pitchers. Mm-hmm. These guys are in their rotation, but none of them would get a Cy Young Award consideration from the Lord.
Oh, yeah, not a chance. And then on top of it, you know, the Angels, it's not like they have this really deep resources in their minor league system.
Not yet.
You know, so they can't really afford to give away draft picks. But in the end, it's the right move for them. I mean, from a marketing standpoint, just to show that there's a commitment to winning, even if it's only half-assed. So hopefully Blake Snell gets his opportunity. He's got to be like the man that's like, you know, the bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. So take the money, and then next, in a year or two, then hopefully you'll be able to negotiate something new.
Yeah, we're 10 days before the end of spring training, and he's not in anybody's camp. I mean, that means he's not opening day ready to pitch.
Right.
Throwing on a backfield at a high school stadium in Seattle where he lives is not the same as doing intense bullpens and everything else.
Oh,
so, yeah. When you're in the course of negotiations, I offered you 3 years, 90.
Mm-hmm.
Typical Scott Boras.
Yeah.
You came back and said 3 years, 90, opt out after the first and second.
Mm-hmm.
I shook my head. I might offer you a counter 3 years, 90. Opt out only after the second year, then you come back and you say, no, it's got to be opt out after the first and second year. I come back and said, 3 years, 90, opt out after the second year. You win the Cy Young Award. I'll give you another $2 million any year you're on my rotation. That's how the negotiations work. But you're always negotiating against yourself when you're dealing with the super agent. But I think there's ways to creatively do it. And the burning question is for Blake Snell. Dude needs to take control of his career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instead of letting Scott Boras walk you through the unemployment line, damn opening days just around the corner last week of March, you're not going to be anybody's camp. How does that help you? So there are ways to just continue the dialogue and continue to negotiate. And I think I was told that he really liked pitching in Southern California. It's much better than pitching in Tampa where there are no fans and an erector set stadium that you gave up home runs. He needs to take control of his career. And he can't do a one-year deal because you flip back to the forfeiture of draft picks. Anaheim, Angels, they don't want to give him 1 year, $30 million, because then he's a free agent again, and you lose your second and fifth picks, and second and fifths are gold.
Yeah, big time. And you know, we said the likely landing spots are Anaheim, New York, San Francisco. But do you think there might be a surprise team that could kind of come out of nowhere?
Well, Boston is desperate for pitching, having lost Lucas Giolito.
Mm-hmm.
But Boston, I don't think historically wants to dive back into a seven-year contract, which is what Scott Boras demanded from the Yankees, from the Mets, was part of the dialogue initially in Boston. Would they go three? Yeah, they probably would. But I'm not giving up draft picks. And I'm in their case, because they had been over the luxury tax, now you got draft picks, and now you got to pay a tax on the $30 million.
Right.
It just really becomes complicated, but they desperately need a pitcher. The agent is telling everybody, we got four offers.
Yeah.
Well, you haven't delivered your client to a team yet. So that's where we are in Major League Baseball. By the time we get to the end of the week next Thursday in our next podcast, maybe we'll have a little bit of clarity. Speaking of contracts, speaking of money, speaking of the National Football League, because their offseason is about to officially begin.
Yeah, I mean, the money stuff we've been talking about with salary caps and free agents. Let's get the latest news here, Lee.
Okay, let's jump around. These are hot headlines around the National Football League. On Monday today, NFL teams were allowed to contact free agents. On Wednesday, the actual free agent window opens and you can sign guys. Okay, here's where we are. First headline, who is over the cap? Well, as we talk to you right now on Monday, there are five NFL teams that are still over the cap. And remember, the cap went from 224 to 255, almost a $30 million hike.
That's huge.
Yeah, and yet there's still five that got problems. The Chargers are $29.9 million over the cap. Obviously, there's going to be some bloodletting between now and Wednesday when they have to be cap-friendly. Miami is $29.7 million over the cap. They're going to have to shed some players, too. As I say, five teams. But those Bolts, Dolphins are the ones that have the significant cap issue. Second headline, Hacksaw, who's got the most cap space? This is staggering. Josh Harris bought the Washington Commanders more than a year ago from your best friend, Daniel Snyder.
Yeah, yeah.
Inherited a wretched team, no quarterback, a lot of contracts. Washington has shed themselves of a lot of players. That's why Washington's not a very good team right now. This has never happened. They're almost 100 million cap space.
Whoa.
Washington Commanders, 96.5 million cap space with a new owner coming in the front door who wants to make his mark. You think they're going to spend some bucks in D.C.? So Washington at 96.5. Tennessee Titans, because they've shedded contracts from a lot of high-priced veterans, they are sitting there at 80.6 cap space. And post-Belichick in Foxborough, and they have never dabbled much in free agency. Of course, they had a lot of cap issues because of Tom Brady's contract, etc. New England's cap number, they got $75 million in cap space. So, and they have a new coach, Jared Mayall, who one of the first things out of his mouth right after he got hired replacing Belichick, said, we're going to burn some money here. We're going to go into free agency. So they're doing business really differently in New England. And one other sidebar story. Now, we're a month out from the NFL draft. Right in the month of March, before the business season kicks in for NFL teams, they also award compensation draft picks for teams that lost free agents last year but did not replace them on the roster. So they awarded comp picks. The 49ers and the Rams have five compensation draft picks. Whoa. Compensation picks are third at the end of the third round, fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, seventh round. So San Francisco and the Rams each have five additional comp picks, and the Eagles have four additional picks for guys who left who were not replaced by free agents. San Francisco picks up a third, a fourth, a fifth, and 2/6. The Rams pick up a third. They also have 6/6/6 and a 7. Now you can say, hey, Hacksaw, at the end of the fifth round, that guy's probably going to be cutting, delivering milk during the regular season. But you can find gems. If you got multiple picks, you can find the 49er quarterback.
Yeah, Brock Purdy.
Yeah, you can find Tom Brady.
Right.
So when you have all these extra picks, you can go take a gamble. Small college guy. Guy that fits the parameters of what you want as a player that might not have been on a really good program. So the comp picks do carry some unique value. And based on the fact that Antonio Gates was undrafted and, gee, maybe we'll take him at the back end of the last round and look what the guys turn into. So comp picks. So it's like your checking account or the wife's checking account. Over the cap, Cap space, comp picks, the floor is yours.
Well, let's go to the Commanders for a minute. You say they're almost $100 million of cap space. Is that because Dan Snyder was just a cheap-ass guy, or is it because they had a lot of veterans and they just cut them loose?
Expiring contracts.
Okay.
Guys have let go. I mean, they built a really great defense, and they let a couple of those guys go. Took a cap hit last year when they let Chase Young go, which was a stunner to me, but he had had a major knee injury, but he had a big dollar value, so they bit the bullet, took the hit. He wound up going to the 49ers, and now he's a free agent, but he may re-sign in San Francisco. But, yeah, that's just a byproduct of a pile of guys they used to pay a lot of money to. Contracts expired, or they got rid of them, or they swallowed the contracts and cut the guys loose. So, but you got a new owner. New owners like to have a signature acquisition. So this will be fun to see if Josh Harris spends it all the first year.
Well, also want to talk about the Rams and the Niners and those what they call them, extra compensation picks.
Yes.
Isn't that the strategy of the new Charger GM and what he did in Baltimore?
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's what they've always done. Baltimore, historically, more than anybody else, and I have no life, so I follow this junk all the time. Historically, their philosophy was, we like you and you played well for us. We're going to let you go a year early rather than keep you in a big contract a year too late. Historically, because every time I'd get to February and March, the Ravens would dispatch this guy or they'd release this guy or they'd work out a trade. I said, wow, you're getting rid of these players? But that's how they did that business, John Harbaugh's organization, with their general managers, going back to Ozzie Newsome to the current one, Eric DeCastro. And Joe Ortiz worked under that philosophy, and they were always, his favorite phrase is, churning the roster.
There you go.
So, yeah, the comp picks carry a lot of value. The late round draft picks carry a lot of value. So that's where we are with NFL and money. Now we go from that to the next NFL storyline.
Yeah, where are they going to spend all this money, Lee?
Okay, let's look at the hot names right here on the board. Item one, this is an NFL quarterback's lead, John. If you got a quarterback, this is my philosophy. If you got a quarterback, lucky you. And if you don't have a quarterback, damn, you better find a way to get a quarterback in the NFL. Right. We had a unique situation. First name on the board, Russell Wilson. Just let go by the Denver Broncos. The Broncos are swallowing $39 million of the final year of his guaranteed contract. They're going to pay that, which means Russell Wilson is on the street right now, and he can sign with anybody. Denver gave him a permission, because free agency doesn't start till Wednesday. Denver gave him permission at the end of last week to go visit teams. You go make the best deal you can. We're going to have to pay a chunk of money. Go find the right fit. The club that signs him only has to pay $1.5 million. Denver pays the rest of it.
What a deal.
Now, if there's a second year on the contract, whoever signs him is probably going to have to pay $30 million. That being said, you get him for year one. I guess the burning question I have with him, at the end of his run in Denver, and he had a really horrible year in 2022. Last year, he was competitive, and he put up good numbers, didn't turn the ball over under Sean Payton. But he just doesn't look like the same quarterback anymore. It's like he woke up an old man. Mm-hmm. So that's a question. Is he an old 34 years of age? Has time gone by him? Or does he need to be in a unique right situation to be successful? So he's going to sign, and that'll be a value signing because Palat's only going to cost you $1.5 million. He visited with the New York Giants on Friday night, and that's weird because the Giants just gave Daniel Jones mega money a year ago, and Jones has got a history of injury. He's coming off a neck issue. So he visited there, and then he got on a plane because he was seen at Newark Airport boarding a plane to go to Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's got all kinds of iffy quarterback situations. Half the world loves Kenny Pickett. The other half don't think he can bleep and play. You got Mason Rudolph's a career backup. What are they going to do? I could see him going to Pittsburgh for a two-year rental at least and playing for the Steelers. So something's going to happen with Russell Wilson, and maybe it happens before we get to the opening of free agency because maybe he'll take the best situation rather than wait and play the game, etc. Second quarterback is Kirk Cousins. He's had a really great statistical year. Minnesota, couple of seasons. Prior to that, big stat numbers in Washington, and he parlayed that into mega contracts. You know, he's been in the $30 million range for a long time. I was told that he's asking for $40 million. Hmm. Now, that's a big-time established quarterback, but he hasn't won bleep in his NFL career. So he's going places. He's going to visit. I hear Washington's going to dive back in because he used to play for the then Redskins before he wound up going to Minnesota. Minnesota would like to keep him, but they can't keep him because they've got to sign two of their marquee free agents, including their top pass rusher, Danielle Hunter. So I don't think the Vikings can afford to have a $40 million quarterback, considering what they got to give Justin Jefferson, the superstar receiver, in the next year, and what they got to give Hunter right now. So Cousins is going to be on the open market. Okay, second topic on the table involves running backs. You know, a year ago, you and I were talking about, geez, these guys are all peeved that they can't get paid. It's right. Like everybody has neutered the running back position like it's not that important. We're going to find out how important it is, because the names on the running back free agent list on Wednesday, John, are unbelievable. Saquon Barkley, Giants. Josh Jacobs has had a couple of mega seasons, Raiders. Austin Eckler, who had five really great seasons with the Chargers. The young Dallas phenom, Tony Pollard, who's a run-catch guy. The heavy-duty bulldozer, Derrick Henry out of Tennessee. And the guy that intrigues me the most, and this might be a reach, played in Green Bay, rotated in and out when there were injuries, pretty productive, got hurt last year, but prior to that, A.J. Dillon. Hmm. Chargers are looking for a pounder, and he is a pounder, and they can probably get him at a really decent price. I don't think he's going to dictate $10 million a year. Of all the guys I just mentioned, he might be the most affordable, and the Chargers have openly said, can you wonder what our team would be if Justin Herbert had a real tough guy running back? A.J. Dillon's a tough guy running back. So suddenly, the running backs, we're going to find out if people say, oh, maybe the running back is important. We'll go get Saquon Barkley or Austin Eckler, et cetera. So you got that. Defensive line. Amazing season for defensive linemen. These are not sexy guys. These are big and forceful. Chris Jones is in Kansas City. He's an unrestricted free agent, but the Chiefs have told everybody, we will sign him. Then that might cost him $30 million. I don't think he goes anywhere else. The one who might is Leonard Williams. He was a really good New York Giant, went to Seattle, kind of, he had any injury problems, played for Pete Carroll. He kind of bounced back. He's on the open market. Unsung hero in Cincinnati. This would be terrible if the Bengals lost him. Defensive tackle DJ Reader. Really good guy in Miami, Christian Wilkins, who's just a big physical force guy. Miami's got, as we alluded to, the cap problems. He might vacate there. So suddenly there's some pretty good defensive linemen that are available. NFL trades. Obviously, we're waiting to see where Justin Fields winds up. You know, half the world's looking for a good quarterback. I was told the price tag would be a second and maybe a fifth to get Justin Fields. He struggled first 2 years, crappy team around him, coaching mess, etc. Had a good season last year when he finally got healthy. Throw and run. I think he's just about to cross the threshold of being a really established, productive quarterback. He's going to get traded. And you got Minnesota, you got the Raiders, you got Pittsburgh, you got Atlanta. Somebody's going to wind up with Justin Fields. Interesting name just surfaced on the board on Saturday. Pittsburgh's kind of reached the end of the road with their diva wide receiver, Diontae Johnson. Mm. They're putting him on the trade block. Now, he's got a $14 million cap figure. He's got 1 year left before he becomes a free agent. And on Saturday, there was a big trade. Denver, which is continuing to shed payroll, they traded Jerry Jeudy, who's their second receiver. Small guy, can fly, catches. I think he caught 54 passes this past year. He's had a lot of injuries. So they traded him to Cleveland. He was a number one pick in Denver. They only got a fifth and a sixth. Cleveland may have really stolen a really good receiver. Of course, you got to keep him on the field. So, John, there's the roster stories as we're talking about. You know the names on that board there. Pick a couple of names. Let's talk.
Well, for Wilson is an interesting one because a lot of the fans on social media responding to the videos that we posted think that he could be a serviceable transition guy, you know, for like a year, a half a year, maybe a year and a half. I like that idea.
Do you think which team?
Raiders? I mean, the Raider fans are saying that sounds like a possibility because they know they're not going to get one of the elite top two or three quarterbacks.
The Raiders have mumbled about trade up. Well, that's a long way to go from 13 to maybe get inside the top three, because they've kind of hinted J.J. McCarthy, although I tend to think J.J. McCarthy at three is a real reach.
Huge reach.
But, you know, they're not talking about the LSU quarterback, Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the guy they're really looking at. If they're going to make a jump from 13 to 3, it'd be to get him. But the issue is to go from 13 to 3, God, you're going to have to give up a lot. I don't know, this year's number one, next year's number one, or maybe a one, a three, and another three in a following year. Price won't be cheap. So, but the thing is, Russell Wilson is maybe a two-year rental. What kind of quarterback are you actually getting? You're not getting the Seahawk vintage Russell Wilson. You get the guy we saw in Denver in a bad situation. And the head coach, Antonio Pierce, last week at the Combines made the comment, I'm tired of this Band-Aid situation in a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And he just talks and talks and talks. A lot of great quotes. So at the end of the day, if you buy that thing, that means they're going to go get a young guy. They're going to groom and grow, and he's going to be the guy rather than another Band-Aid, a.k.a. Russell Wilson.
Well, you know, I like the story. You said they saw him in the Newark airport.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like the TMZ of sports, which is a thing, you know, where they're tracking these guys. I want to go back to the heavy duty running back, because, you know, when I hear your voice and I hear heavy duty running back, I think of Marion Butts.
And Natron,
you know,
Means.
And Natron Means. I mean, so is this Diller guy in Green Bay? Is he kind of like one of those old school Charger running backs?
He's built like a fire hydrant. I mean, he's a physical force guy. He's got calves and thighs and legs that are like tree stumps.
Wow.
And he's got power. And he's got an extra gear. Now, he's more of a tackle-to-tackle guy than out in the edge. You know, Aaron Jones is a great running back at Green Bay. Now, he's been dinged up a little bit. I'm surprised that Green Bay's letting A.J. Dillon go on the open market. But, you know, if A.J. Dillon's trying to get $5 to $8 million and become the guy, you can't do that if you're paying Aaron Jones $11 mil. You can't put all that money into one position. So I think this is a unique guy that if I were king, I think I'd look at this guy, because I've watched him play and I said, for a number two, he should be somebody's number one.
Yeah, well, the Chargers need a lot of help, so yeah. But maybe that's their guy.
So what do you think about Saquon Barkley? I mean, the rumor mill is Philadelphia's gutted its running back room.
Mm-hmm.
The rumor mill is they want Saquon Barkley. Can you imagine Saquon Barkley crossing the bridge, going from New York Philadelphia within the division?
Yeah, that'd be something.
How do you think that go down on the Meadowlands?
Yeah, that would be tough. And you got to face him two times a year. But walk me back on Saquon Barkley, because he was Penn State, right?
Yeah, big time physical guy, has got an extra gear, catches the ball well out of the backfield. He's had two major injuries in about a 5-year span.
But how old is he? I mean, he's got to be getting close to 30, right?
No. He's got to be, because he came out early. Maybe 26, maybe 27.
Well, 30 is that magic line in the sand for running backs.
Well, somebody said it was.
Yeah.
But he's a really good player. I mean, we don't get to see many Giant games out here, and have had kind of a wretched couple of seasons because the team's been decimated by injuries. But, man, you watch him in the hole, and next thing he's at the second level. You watch him dart dash. You see the extra gear, and he's coming in the hole. He's going to hit you. And if you can't take him down, then he's into the second level, and then boom. I think he's a really good running back. Now, he had a contract dispute last year. They franchise tagged him. It was a real mess. You know, he made $12 mil last year. Now, the reason the Giants didn't tag him is if you're franchise tagged 1 year, you can be tagged the second time at 120% of what you made the year prior. Well, he got tagged at 12 last year, which meant this year it was over 14.
Right.
I don't know anybody that's paying running backs 14 mil per year. But he's really good. And, you know, of all the running backs I ran through, if you're asking me, I think I'd rather have Barkley than I would Josh Jacobs. So Jacobs is heavy duty with the Raiders, and he has done a lot of what Barkley's done, although he's only done it maybe twice in a 5-year run because he had injuries. I love Eckler, but I think Eckler's got to go to a specialized offense that's going to let him run some and throw a bunch to him. But, you know, I'm surprised the Chargers are treating him with such disrespect. He strung together 5 really good years. Last year he got dinged up, and that relationship's kind of fallen apart. Derrick Henry, that's heavy duty out of Tennessee, but He's got 200,000 miles on the wheels. Mm-hmm. You talk about waking up 31 years old and being old. That could well happen.
Well, go back to the Commanders for a minute. With all that money, do you think they're in on all these top free agents?
Well, I think they should be, and I think they will be because the owner wants to make a splash. I think priority one is quarterback. What are they doing at quarterback? Because they've not had quarterback in a long time.
They have the number two pick, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you could take anybody but Caleb Williams at number two, or would you rather be competitive early, which means you bring Kirk Cousins back, and then you can use your second pick to go get an offensive lineman or go get the top defensive player on the board or maybe go get a running back, although running backs in this draft are not rated that high right now. I think depending on what happens with Cousins and free agency on Wednesday, that'll dictate what Washington does. If they don't get Kirk Cousins to come back to D.C., then they have to decide, well, who do we like with the second quarterback position? Or do we make a trade for Justin Fields? Interesting, because there's at least eight teams in that first round that gotta go find a quarterback.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of them out there. Kirk Cousins is another guy that you always hear that he's so talented. And you see glimpses of it, but he's never in the final rounds of the playoffs.
No, never, hardly ever. And up until this past year, he had never won any quote marquee network games on Monday Night Football. His record was, I don't recall it, but it was horrible. It was like 3-12 in Monday night, Sunday night football.
Really?
Yeah, over the course of his career.
Well, he's been on some bad teams too. So.
Well, true. And, yeah, but he's thrown for lots of yards and he's thrown a lot of touchdowns. His teams just haven't won. So maybe it's unfair, but Kevin O'Connell likes him a great deal. But just because of the cap issues that they got in Minnesota, they can't sign him. They can't re-sign him.
Yeah.
Now Minnesota's got a quarterback problem on top of all their other issues. So this Bears watching, teams today started contacting free agents. Wednesday, they can start signing NFL free agents. Hey, we get to halftime. Our podcasts are brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. These people have been in business since the 1970s, serving people who need help with their eyes. It could be glaucoma. It could be cataracts. It could be other issues. You need exams. You need glasses. You need contacts. You need potential eye treatment and surgeries. You need these guys. North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. And our Monday bonus podcast also brought to you by Dixon Line Lumber and Home Centers. 9 stores to serve you in San Diego. What's impressed you the most, John? Because I've done business with them. You've done business with them. What do you like the most about who these people are?
Well, a number of things. So first of all, they've been in town for over 100 years. Their staff is just really helpful. A lot of them are ex-contractors, so they really know their stuff. And they got a wide variety of product that's right there available in the yard. And by the way, the lumber they have is so much better than what you could get from those big box guys. So if you want quality lumber, check out Dixie Line.
You got projects. Build it. Fix it. Guarantee you will enjoy it. Thanks to these people, Dixie Line. Couple of programming notes before we go to the second half of our Monday bonus podcast. If you like sports, we invite you to check my website, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. It is written every day of the week. It's there for you every morning. You like sports, want you to be part of that. Also, in the front page of my homepage, there's a big orange box. Want you to sign up and join Hacksaw's Insiders Group. You will get notifications every time we put something up on our YouTube channel. And by the way, we want you to share all this information with all your friends in your address book. And we want you to subscribe so you'll know what's going on. And while you're at it, this helps us a great deal with these people. Give us a thumbs up or give us a 5-star rating so everybody else will know what you think about our Monday and Thursday podcast. And John, aside from the Insiders Group, we've started something that's really cool. It's all your fault. Let's talk about Fans Forum just for those of us, those on the live stream that have never been involved with what we're doing.
Yeah, so the Fans Forum segment has always been something that the listeners and viewers really enjoy. It's like the old talk radio days where you're getting questions and comments. And so, yeah, we we're gonna do Fans Forum at the conclusion of every podcast. Today, we're just gonna focus on our friends and social media, but it's always a great chance to get the fans involved.
Okay, we're here every Monday at 1 p.m. We're here every Thursday at 1 p.m. Hope you'll tell all your friends. We go to basketball, college basketball. We were both yelling at the TV for differing reasons. San Diego State's getting ready to the Mountain West Conference Tournament. I thought the Aztecs game Friday night with Boise was just a hell of a basketball game, except what was on the scoreboard when they were done in overtime.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy game, lots of ups and downs, wild shots, and the Aztecs came up on the bottom end of that one.
Nice headline, big boy basketball.
Oh, huge.
I mean, you could pick any of my favorite phrase, you know, no place for the timid. This was a rock fight. This was body bag basketball at its best. Boise State got up off the deck. They were down by 10 in the second half. And, you know, when that happens, especially at Viejas Arena, you can just sense that the roof is about to fall in on the other guy. Mm-hmm. It did not happen. And they came back. You know, San Diego State built a 10-point lead early in the second half. John, they went 12 for 15 shooting the basketball in the early stages of the second half, wiped out the deficit. It became the 10-point lead, and then they lost the game. Boise, middle of the second half, changed defenses, went to a 1-3-1 defense. They denied the basketball to Jaden Ledee, the Aztecs All-American. Ledee went the final 13 minutes without a basket, and you can't win unless he is producing on the block, in the lane, whatever. They never got the ball to him, and he was gassed. He finished with 21 points, and he got pounded all night long. They almost got bailed out by Lamont Butler and Darian Trammell. Those two guys combined for 21, just like Ledee had 21. But when Boise needed it, Boise hit the big shots, and you shake your head and said, how did they do that? Roddy Anderson, with 20 seconds to go on the clock, takes it from midcourt, drives the lane through all the bigs, sees a seam, weaves his way, lays it up, ties the game with 2 seconds to go. That shoves the thing into overtime. Aztecs got the lead. You got the sense this is about to end. And what happens? Unbelievable three-point shot by Max Rice, falling away from the basket, hit it from the other area code.
Yes.
I mean, he was almost, with the time clock running out, he was almost at midcourt, and he heaved it, and it went in. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, 10 became 7, another basket, then it became 5, and then Boise's back in the game. And then in the final seconds, backup big man Cam Martin, walking around with 4 fouls around his neck, comes up with a big rebound, gets hacked, hits 2 free throws, and on the final play of the game, he blocks a long-distance 3. They win the game. Heartbreaking loss, seniors' night, 22-9 on the season. Aztecs, though, have 7 losses against the elite teams in the league. And I give Boise a hell of a lot of credit for not having the walls fall in on them, mm-hmm. In a really tough place to win. I mean, it snapped the Aztecs' hopes to be 15-0 and unbeaten for the first time ever in a season. It snapped a 20-game win streak. Tremendous performance by the Broncos. And by the way, when they're going off the floor, if I were an Aztec player, shake the hand of the Bronco player who just beat me. I'll see your ass next Friday night in the Mountain West Conference tournament
right.
In Las Vegas. So that's where we are there. And I think the Mountain West Conference tournament is going to be crazy. I mean, we got 6 teams, maybe 7 if you include Vegas. We got at least 6 that I think are primed to be picked in March Madness. And you and I have briefly had this conversation a week ago. What's made the Mountain West Conference more than just San Diego State or the odd Lobos team at the Pit in Albuquerque? Virtually all these schools have benefited in different ways, transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at some of these schools that have gotten guys who transferred in from Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Some of these guys gotten transfers from Auburn. These are bounce-back kids or kids that had relationships with new head coaches that came here to play a year or play a graduate school season. And they did something nobody else has done. I mean, Utah State has done this more than anybody else. Colorado State has dabbled in it. They reached across the state line, and they found a small college guy who could play. They found a guy that might be playing at a 1AA school like Appalachian State, and they lured him to come play in the Mountain West. They found, Utah State's found a couple of kids that played Division II that were superstars at Division II, played to Sioux Falls College. These kids developed, they took them, and showed that they could play in the Mountain West Conference. So not every Division I guy is a star, but what they've sight and scoped is guys who could play at the Division I AA level and really dominate, and at the Division II level that are taking the jump up. I mean, it's fascinating. Everybody's got leapers in the conference now, and a whole pile of schools have got guys who can hit the three, which changes the whole concept of your game. So I think the Mountain West tournament is just going to be crazy.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait for it. You know, and then like Roddy Anderson, you know, was from UCSD, you know, so he transferred from, you know, San Diego and is in the Mountain West. He's made a big difference. I want to talk about Dutcher because I saw the post game presser and he had a really kind of like good, how would I say this, kind of good life lessons. He says, you know, I like the way we played that game. You know, we played tough. We played strong. Our guys put in a lot of effort, working hard. But sometimes the results are not, you know, imminent right then when you put in the effort. Sometimes there's like a time delay. And I thought that was a really good message, you know, because it'll keep his guys on point. But that game, it just wasn't their night. I mean, that heave that Max Rice threw, it was like a shot put throw. And insane, it went in. Nothing but net. I mean, it was, you saw that. And the Aztecs, they have balls that went halfway down the cylinder and popped out. And you're like, oh, here we go again.
I think Dutcher's done a hell of a job. I mean, you talk about him reinserting his, quote, philosophy of we don't see instant returns as hard as we work. You know, he kind of did this to me at the press conference earlier in the week because we talked about the six bad losses on the road in hostile situations, to which he said, Lee, we were in those games in the final possession, or Lee, we lost by three, or Lee, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. I mean, my theory is scoreboard does not lie. You lost six times. It doesn't matter because they've got so many quad one wins. They're a really good team.
Well, that means we have a lot of karma going into the postseason, right?
Okay. Yeah, a lot of receipts.
Yeah.
Let me say this about Dutcher. We have been spoiled. You think back to all the good players they had, Steve Fisher era, Dutcher's the assistant, and then what's transpired since Dutch became the head coach. What they did to help develop Kawhi Leonard, that's pretty impressive. Now, he was an elite defensive player, phenomenally sized hands, workaholic. He was a great college defensive player who could score some. Gone to the NBA. San Antonio drafted him on his potential, what they saw, upside.
Mm-hmm.
Aztecs coaching staff developed that kid, helped make him a number one pick. Kid had a lot to do with it because the kid's work ethic is off the charts. What they did with Jaden Ladie is almost the exact same thing, a little bit different player. You know, Ladie showed up here after having been at Ohio State and at TCU. He's a Houston native. He showed up here at 6'9", 190, rail thin. They developed him. He didn't start. He played flashes, etc. Redshirted, played flashes the second year, stud this year. The coolest thing is to see somebody like Ladie and a little bit like Kawhi, to see them develop as a college student and a player. He goes from 6'9", 195 when he got here to 6'9", 240, and he's the best big man on the West Coast, including a bunch that are in Tucson at the University of Arizona. And he should be an All-American, first-team All-American. He's probably going to win the Karl Malone Award for best power forward in college basketball. He's on the finals with a wooden list. I don't know if he'll be the player of the year because the Purdue center looks like he's got that locked up for a second year in a row. But how cool is it to sit there and see these guys grow from young players to great players and grow as, quote, men. And that's because of Dutcher and prior to that, Steve Fisher. So, you know, I am so impressed with Dutch, who I've gotten to know a lot when he's not doing this to me. I'm just so impressed with what he stands for and the structure of his program and what they teach. He's got a doctorate degree in defense. My God, yeah, every kid that walks through that Viejas locker room learns how to play Aztec defense, and as Dutch likes to say, the reason we went on the road, My defense travels.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't lose the luggage this time.
They didn't. But, you know, even guys like, you know, Darian Trammell, and then last year, who was the kid? Matt Bradley.
Sure.
You know, they talk a lot about the culture and Dutcher and the way they feel like they're embraced, you know, and they're respected. And it's just, it's a phenomenal program. And Steve Fisher was awesome in his own way. He was an angel, you know, sent down from heaven for San Diego. And then we get Dutcher. Ladee, man, that dude is a presence. I mean, he's a guy, like, I've always had this thing. I'd love to shake Shaquille O'Neal's hand. That's one of my lifetime bucket lists. But Ladee would be close. I mean, just to be in that presence of that size and strength, I mean, that'd be unbelievable.
He's going to power forward. I look at him, and this is an old name out of the past. That's why I have gray hair. I see Maurice Lucas.
Ooh. Well, that's a good call.
Truck Robinson. I mean, these were power forwards that you could not move, and you had a tough time defending, and they would blast you if you tried to block them out, and you couldn't get around them because they were just it's special to see what the young man's become, considering what he was he got here, and what he's done to just make himself. I think he's a number one draft pick, a first-round draft pick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw it. John Rothstein had him as a second-team All-American, but at the top of the list of the second team. So there's still a shot for him to be all-first-team, which would be terrific. But the NBA scouts have just got to be salivating, right? I mean, this guy can not only play tough in the paint, but he can hit the jumper from the elbow and the occasional three.
Yeah, he can hit it from corners. He hits some threes, and maybe they work on that. He can hit it in the middle of the paint from the free throw line. So, and he's a consummate team player. And the intangible about him that just impresses me, his resilience and his self-control. Because he's involved with back alley basketball. He gets doubled and he gets tripled. He got knocked down on the floor three times in the first minute and a half. They never called a foul in this game against Boise State. But the kid's mindset is just laser focused. So it's so cool just to see these stars become really great players, and then see the development of all the other kids that they've developed going back to the beginning of the Steve Fisher era. So this is fascinating. So that's a good story, but we have to cover all topics on the table. John?
Okay, you want to talk about the Bruins?
Go ahead. We have to?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of chaos in Westwood.
Nice headline, walking, talking disasters. We've been talking about just about the situation with Mick Cronin. The fact that their season's fallen apart, they're not going to any postseason play. And this is UCLA, and they're not going to any postseason play. They've been hurt. Guys have come. Guys hit the transfer portal the last couple of years. Guys file for the NBA draft. They're playing in the NBA G League now, where they could have done what Ladee did and stayed another year and grown as a player, as a person. And Mick is not handling this adversity. And I'll tell you what. They sit here at the end of the season. I mean, they just got creamed by Arizona on Thursday night in the Pac-12 conference. And I think I know what's coming left, what's coming next. You know, he just continues to talk. Not a clue on defense. And he's a defensive coach. And his kids just don't do it. Not enough on offense. That's a byproduct of losing Bailey last year, who jumped to the NBA after half a season. And that, you know, this comes on the heels of the last explosion, that how can you build a team roster with guys who won't fight? And then the prior explosion, the first time this all happened, don't call your mama. She doesn't want to answer the phone. And no one wants you in the transfer portal. Tell you what, he's borderline right now, just emotionally unraveling. And I could see him standing up at press conference at the end of the season. Here's the 800 number, you guys. Call the transfer portal. They got a problem. He's got the four Euros who have really gone through a culture shock thing. I wonder if how many of those guys are going to stay, because they're not handling this Pac-12 level of ball very well. And I don't think these players are handling the abuse that they seem to be getting dumped on. I mean, he's had three explosions now with the media.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big issue there. So we got Mick Cronin. And then we got Chip Kelly, who didn't talk to anybody in the media after he walked away from UCLA, and he didn't say goodbye to his team. Chip Kelly at spring football practice in Columbus with Ohio State, where he's now assistant head coach and offensive coordinator, finally spoke out this week. At the end of the week, Chip Kelly was asked, why? Why did you leave UCLA, dream job, one of the highest paid coaches in the history of the Pac-12 conference? Quote, I did not want to be the CEO of a football program. He didn't like what college football has become. You know, Nick Saban's kind of enunciated that. Dabo Sweeney at Clemson has enunciated that. I did not want to be the CEO of the team, which meant he didn't want to deal with the NIL. He didn't want to deal with boosters. And he was kind of adverse to the transfer portal, although he did jump in and use it. He said, I want to go back and just be a position coach. He said the happiest time was when he was a position coach coaching quarterbacks. Unhappy time is when he had to deal with money and he had to deal with transfers, deal with people tampering with his players and dealing with the freaking media. He just wanted to be a position coach. He says, all I want to do is coach X's and O's and nothing else. And he wrapped up his brief comment to the Columbus reporters by saying, best part of college football is coaching college football. None of this other periphery stuff. So Chip Kelly finally admits, I couldn't handle it. He's not the only one. Brady Hoke is one. Jeff Tedford is another. The coach up at Wyoming. Those are all really good veteran coaches who said, I can't exist in the atmosphere that exists right now. So UCLA basketball coach, ex-UCLA football coach, and John Riley in left field says,
well, the Mick Cronin kind of thrown his players under the bus, you know?
Again and again.
Yeah, so it reminds me of a piece of advice my friend Larry told me one time, and he said, you praise in public and you criticize in private.
Sure.
You know, so this is a bad look for UCLA. It's a bad, you know, situation for the AD, you know, wondering, man, this isn't reflecting well on our university. Do we need to let him go?
Or does he trying to set the stage to vacate to go take the Ohio State job?
Ah, okay, so there's an ulterior motive here.
I'm not big on conspiracies, but I'm kind of connecting the dots.
Okay, and then with Chip Kelly, it just goes to show you that not every, you know, great NFL mind is made out to be a leader of men, to be, as he said, a CEO. And yeah, you've got to be that kind of a personality, but there's a long list of guys like Roadkill on the side of the road that were brilliant minds, but just couldn't cut it as at the top of the org chart.
Well, he did cut it at Oregon. I mean, what he did there, but that was a different era. That, you know, that was a chunk of years ago, and that was prior to NIL, prior to transfer portal.
Was he there during the Marcus Mariota era?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that was like in the mid-teens, right?
He came as part of the Mike Bellotti arrival, and Bellotti was one of the first really great coaches in the conference in terms of throwing the football everywhere. And then Bellotti woke up and didn't want to coach anymore and went to TV. Chip took the job and he escalated upon everything that Bellotti had laid in the foundation. And he recruited the hell of skill guys. I mean, Mariota was one of the first ones in there. But then they went and got running backs and they went and got wide receivers. Then he became a crazy man as a head coach with the blur offense. And having to play at Autzen Stadium, I've been in insane asylums. That one is really crazy.
Yeah, it's a great stadium.
Football version of Viejas Arena in basketball. He did a great job. And then he wanted to go next challenge and he went to the NFL. And that was a disaster. Be it Philadelphia, be it San Francisco. End of story. And I thought when he came back to UCLA, turn the light switch on. He's going to do at UCLA what he did in Eugene, Oregon. Did not happen. And then the landscape changed. And as he said, I don't want to be a CEO of a football team anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I totally understand that. And good, you know, turn the page, you know, let someone else get in that seat and hopefully they'll have more success.
But I'm sorry. He made a lot of money. They gave him a ton of things that he wanted. UCLA's got a $36 million athletic department deficit, and he walked out the door a week after the signing period. You're talking about betrayal of all the kids that committed because of you, and you walked out and you didn't even say goodbye.
So do they Big Ten is this year, right?
Oh, you think?
Yeah, so in a few months, right, they're going to be playing Big Ten ball. I mean, is UCLA is going to be on the bottom half of that
conference?
Oh, I think
they're going to get lit. Now, yeah. Granted, the hiring of Deshaun Foster, the arrival of Eric Bieniemy, has kind of salved the wounds of those kids. Hardly anybody And you don't see this very often. Hardly anybody's gone on the transfer portal. But that's because Foster was promoted from within, and they all liked him, and they spoke up on his behalf. But they don't have enough players. My goodness. I think it's Rutgers.
Oh, yeah.
Maryland.
Yeah.
Bottom feeders.
Right.
Northwestern.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those.
Yeah. You can locate UCLA in the standings adjacent to Rutgers and Maryland and maybe Northwestern.
Indiana.
Yeah. So it's going to be tough. Okay. We go some football, basketball. Let's talk hockey.
Yeah. You were lighting up my phone with text messages of all these trades in the NHL. So what's the story, Lee?
Well, we came through the National Hockey League trade deadline at the end of the week. 44 trades. All-time record in the NHL. And we talked about the new breed of general managers that have come on board. Historically, you always kept your draft picks. Historically, as free agency arrived, you spent where you could. It's all changed. Everybody's adding firepower. Everybody's trading draft picks. Everybody's attempting to move out bad contracts that the prior general manager saddled your team with. It's almost like the GM has the philosophy, I don't care about tomorrow, John. I just care about getting some wins right now. Who did well? Las Vegas has been wrecked by injuries. You know, it's this former Stanley Cup champion. Mm-hmm. As an expansion team, really came fast, came quick, had terrible injuries. They traded for the leading scorer, San Jose, Thomas Hertl. Guy's got like 214 career goals. San Jose has just given up. They're just in total rebuild mode. Big contract. They traded for Calgary's top defenseman, Noah Hanifin. That's an offensive defenseman. They added Anthony Mantha, 30-goal scorer, Washington Capitals. So Las Vegas, in a span of 24 hours, has really added a lot. Now, they gave up a whole lot of draft picks to make that happen. The weird one was Carolina. They are run by the former San Diego Gulls general manager, Don Waddell, who brought the franchise back here to San Diego in the American League, prior to that in the IHL. They made a bold move. They got Jake Gensel from the Penguins, and he carries a big contract, like $6 to $7 million, and he's about to be a free agent. Penguins had to trade him because they just couldn't re-sign him. They got so many other young players. They also took a gamble on Evgeny Kuznetsov, who had been in the NHL assistance program. I don't know whether that was alcohol or whether that was drugs, but Washington got rid of him, so they wound up picking up him. So Carolina's choices, is it a short rental for Gensel, or are they going to be able to sign him to a contract extension? Our Winnipeg, they've finally gotten their guys healthy. They're in first place in their division. This is kind of bold. You know, they went out and made a trade weeks prior to the deadline to get Sean Monahan from Montreal, and they just got Tyler Toffoli, who's a grinder worker bee, ex-King, played pretty well in New Jersey Devils. So Winnipeg's really helped themselves. Everybody out west, though, starting from Vegas through Winnipeg, everybody out west has had to do something because of what's happened other places. Vancouver's traded the whole future away. Canucks are in first place right now in the NHL Pacific. And Vancouver started all this by trading for Elias Lindholm, who was part of the fire sale in Calgary. Then they traded for Nikita Zadorov, a big defenseman, physical guy. He came from Calgary. So here's Vancouver in first place, and they had two more key components. Now Colorado's got to do something because of what Vancouver did. They get the leading scorer from Buffalo. Sabres could not re-sign Casey Mittelstadt because they got so many other young stars that are knocking down big mouths. So Colorado gets him on a rental, and Colorado also gets Sean Walker, high-scoring defenseman from Philadelphia. So suddenly Colorado, which has a lot of injuries, they get two established, can help you right now, guys. And then Edmonton sitting there with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Edmonton says, look what these other guys have done. So they go get Adam Henrique from the Ducks and Sam Carrick, former Duck and former San Diego Gull. Those guys are grinders, and they can score some goals. So what you've got out west is Vancouver did this. So Colorado, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Vegas all had to respond. Western Conference, take no prisoners.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's the bottom line there. Now, in terms of bad situations, I don't know how the ownership in Calgary can face their fans. You know, we've got part of our hockey network. O Canada joins us weekly on our podcast. I mean, this is a Calgary franchise that got rid of Johnny Gaudreau. They called him Johnny Hockey. They got rid of Matthew Tkachuk. They initially traded Sean Monahan away. I mean, and they got rid of Noel Hanifin. who the hell they can put on the ice the rest of the season. And that's Calgary. That's a big-time market. The Ducks, I wrote a column on my website, did not go down very well in Anaheim. You know, when is this rebuilding going to stop? When are you going to start to win? They keep trading veteran players away. The last vested veteran is John Gibson, the goaltender, who's by himself in that locker room because he's surrounded by all these young pups, and they're force-feeding all these kids. Now that, you know, I understand Pat Verbeek's thing, you've got to fix this. Well, you've had 2.5 years to fix it, and you're almost at the bottom of the standings again. And, yeah, you can yell at me that, Lee, we have 10 draft picks next June. But those are 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. Mm. Those are college kids. Those are Euros. None of those guys that I know of are really close to being ready to star. And you've done this 3 years in a row now. When are you going to stop trading people? When are we going to turn the corner with this franchise? And, you know, I hate to fire a cheap shot here, but I guess I'll take a 5-minute major if I have to. You know, all you're putting on the ice in Anaheim is an AHL team now. Mm. You know, you'd be great if you're in the Quebec Junior League or the Ontario Hockey League with a roster you've signed, because all you got are these really young guys. So, yeah, you might win the Memorial Cup, the championship in junior hockey, but Christ, you're so far behind in terms of established talent. When are you going to win? And is anybody in Anaheim going to revolt and say, this isn't working? Why? Look at what we've done to ourselves. I mean, it's not like Verbeek is new. He's been here for more than 15 minutes. So I feel bad for Ducks fans. And what makes it harder is Rob Blake has got the Kings positioned to be a team that could go deep in the NHL playoffs. So that's a long answer. That's 44 trades. Who won, who lost, at least one man's opinion, firing a slap shot from the blue line. Go ahead, John.
So if you're looking, 44 deals is amazing. Which team in the NHL, you know, won the trade deadline that maybe catapulted from a middle tier team up towards the top for the playoffs?
Well, as I just alluded to, Vancouver has now taken the next step with the arrival of the guys from Calgary. Colorado has been beset by injuries. They have not had their captain and their great scorer, Gabe Landeskog, for 2 years now. He's had knee replacement cartilage surgery and just a long road back. Colorado's had a lot of injuries. Edmonton's got a lot of great players, and the goaltender has grown a little bit this year. Now they've really added something to it. Winnipeg's got a lot more firepower now that they had. They just need to keep their guys on the ice. So, and Vegas. And Vegas has been shredded by injuries, and it's a very different team now than the one that raised the Stanley Cup a couple of short seasons ago. So those are the ones that I think really helped themselves. Mm-hmm. And again, it's the philosophy. I got contracts. I just can't keep these contracts. Or I got these guys at the end of their contracts. I'm not going to be able to re-sign them. So I'll take whatever assets I can get in a deal. The new breed of NHL general managers operating the franchise is a lot differently than the GMs of yesteryear. You wouldn't remember these names or know these names. Cliff Fletcher, Toronto, Calgary, Sam Pollock, Montreal Canadiens. That's a long time ago. It's just a very, very different era in pro hockey.
Yeah, I mean, you look at these. It's amazing, all these trades that have happened. Going into the playoffs, because it's only a couple of months away, right? Or like maybe 1 month away.
Well, yeah, we're in the final 25 games of the season for most teams.
So we're getting close here. Who do you think right now are the, you know, two or three hottest teams for the Stanley Cup?
The biggest underachiever in my lifetime are my Toronto Maple Leafs. They have one of the highest payrolls in the league, just beneath the cap. Everybody's making mega money. Goaltending, I think, is a little suspect. I keep thinking they're going to win. One of these years, they're going to win. They never quite get there. But Austin Matthews might score 70 goals this season. I mean, he has just become an unbelievable sniper, and they're very deep. So Toronto, I don't know if Vancouver's real, but, you know, Vancouver's goaltender's from here. Thatcher Demko.
Oh, nice.
Scripps Ranch kid.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, he used to play street hockey out front of your house.
Yeah.
He's an established, rock-solid guy, and the Canucks have just put a lot of players around them, and they have the most wins of anybody in the NHL. To me, Vancouver has to prove, though, once we get to first round of the playoffs, if they've got the staying power to grind through seven-game series. I think the Stanley Cup, with apologies to baseball fan, NFL fan, I think the Stanley Cup is the toughest damn trophy to win because it's best of seven every series and it's take-no-prisoners hockey, and you play every other night. So I'd say Vancouver, Toronto are the most unique things. Boston's got a really good hockey team, not a lot of sexy names right now. New York Rangers have had a really good season. So just off the top of my head, we got another 20 games to see, and then we'll start postseason play. And I trust me, We will be drinking Molson Canadian watching the playoffs, you and me.
Yeah.
Okay, we go from that. Last topic on the table. This involves auto racing.
Auto racing. Always count on you, Lee, to cover all the sports on the table.
Oh, war of words everywhere in auto racing. Here's the background story. This involves Michael Andretti, a legendary IndyCar driver, great heritage with his father. Michael runs the Andretti team. They've been very successful in IndyCar. Mario is kind of like the father figure of the operation. Michael Andretti filed a $250 million application to build an American team to go over there, go to Formula One. Mm. It's been 6 months. They filed the application. FIA, which is the governing body that controls F1, Liberty, which owns it. Liberty is a broadcast sports company here in the States. They rejected the application, and they sent back just a short form letter. Thank you for your application. We are returning the money. And they insulted them. They rejected the application from Andretti Cadillac and sent the $250 million back. Quote, "We do not believe Andretti Cadillac is up to our standards. Therefore, we are formally rejecting this." It was like a printed freaking letter. Something get in the mail. It wasn't
really
yeah.
like a form letter.
Exactly. There yeah. we go. You've written a few of those in yeah, your life.
Right.
There was no meeting. There was no conversation with Michael Andretti. There was no interview with Michael Andretti. He was really insulted. This is Andretti. This is a legacy name of auto racing here in the States. And they, at the bottom of the form letter, they wrote in, "We do not believe the Andretti name carries the value any longer to our series."
What?
I read the form letter, and I said, wait a minute. I look at Formula One, and you have Team Red Bull. We've talked about
yeah.
that. Max Verstappen mm-hmm. has won 18 of the last 19 races.
Amazing.
And we're totally dominant.
Yeah.
You have that, and you got Team Mercedes, which had dominated for an extended period with Sir Lewis Hamilton, great British driver. That's it. The other eight teams in F1 can't compete. And you're rejecting Michael Andretti because you don't think Andretti Cadillac can compete? What the hell have you got on your starting grid
right.
once you get beyond Team Red Bull and the situation involving Lewis Hamilton, who's leaving Mercedes to go to Ferrari? You got all the rest of the teams, they can't compete. They just don't know how to do the technology to compete against Team Red Bull. And you sit there and you insult the Andretti family.
Yeah, that's low.
And then Chip Ganassi, who's as good in IndyCar racing as obviously Michael Andretti is, he had a meltdown this week at the St. Petersburg Grand Prix. It's the first race of the season in Florida. And he said, F1 racing is unwatchable. Verstappen starts on the pole virtually every race. He or his teammate Sergio Perez, they win every race. He said, nobody can compete with these guys. And by the way, there's a lot of dysfunction there. There's all these investigations about, have you violated the salary cap rule as it relates to expenditures, etc. And he says, you look at IndyCar, this is Chip Ganassi. He said, I can't watch F1 because it's unwatchable, it's not competitive. IndyCar had seven different winners, seven different drivers mm-hmm. who won big races last year. NASCAR, anyone can win on any weekend with the good old boys.
Right.
And Chip Ganassi says, you're insulting Michael Andretti? Look what the hell's on your starting grid. Mm-hmm. The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix was this past weekend. Look who's in your starting grid. So it's an amazing story of arrogance. And the fact that F1 is now owned by Liberty, Liberty Broadcasting, Liberty Sports, why would they not admit Michael Andretti, challenge him and Cadillac to build the engines to compete in 2027, I think was supposed to be the starting. Why would Liberty not want another American entry? It's hard. I mean, Haas F1 is an American-based company out of Indiana and Carolinas that's been in F1 for 3 years and has just really scuffled and struggled. But this is Michael Andretti. I've gone too long on auto racing, but passion play. So anyhow, that's my checkered flag. How dare F1 insult the Andretti name?
Yeah, that's unbelievable. You know, and you would think that the Formula One organization would want more American participation.
Yeah, because I heard they're going to have five races on the F1 grid within the next couple of years.
I mean, this is like the next frontier for F1 in America and all the money and everything. But you said that Andretti gave that or ponied up $250 million and they rejected it and sent the money back.
In a form letter.
Yeah. Well, I know someone that could really use $250 million right now.
You want to stand in line behind me?
Well, not you. I'm thinking of some guy that's campaigning for president.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, here we go. Sorry to bring that up. But, you know, the Andretti name, to me, is like, you know, a blue blood of basketball. It's a blue blood of auto racing.
Concur with you wholeheartedly. Mario was really good. He came from Italy. He did very well for a short period in F1 and came here, and look what he did here back in the day. And his son has followed that tradition. So, I mean, just why you're treating that name with that disrespect.
Yeah.
Freaking European people. Yeah. It's just...
How about a relegation league, you know, for F1? If there's 10, maybe have a junior circuit and let some of these guys move into the top 10?
Well, the other factor in the equation is the other eight teams, aside from where they are with Team Red Bull and Mercedes, the other eight teams don't want another team to come in and, quote, split the pie.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're all making phenomenal money, but the other teams have lower budgets because they don't have corporate sponsorships to the tune that Red Bull and Mercedes do, and they just have not been able to compete. And I like F1. But it is really bleeping unwatchable because it's Max Verstappen every Sunday. And what kind of fun is that?
Yeah. I mean, you get that pole position. You're in a great you're in a great situation to really stay at the lead the whole race.
OK, on we go. This is John's segment. We normally do fans forum. We're not doing it today. We're doing strictly social media sound off. I'm sure there's some people here joining us that are not going to agree with anything we've said. That's on John's watch, not mine. Go ahead, John.
All right, let's go here with some Dodgers comments. This is from Jack. He says, Dave Roberts has never been able to manage a bullpen. His instincts in that department stink. He clearly doesn't know how to turn up the heat on his guys for the playoffs. They win with their talent despite him.
Scoreboard does not lie to a degree. I think postseason failures are right there. How he uses his starting pitching, when he pulls his starting pitching in the most important time of the year, yanking starters out of a playoff game, 4 1/3 innings into it, taking some of your starters and putting them in the bullpen for emergency use, which screws up their between starts regimen. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of, quote, mistakes. Now, I will say this maybe in defense of Dave Roberts. The analytic guys upstairs come down and say, here's the sheet of paper, John. This is what we're doing if your pitcher starter gets in trouble. And this is the guy we think you should call out of the bullpen if your starter gets in trouble. And if there's certain matchups, this is what you should do if you're going to the bullpen. So is this Dave Roberts making bad calls or the analytics guys mandating with the memo they just sent down to the dugout? I think that's a piece of the equation.
Well, it's either, you know, the front office telling Roberts what to do, or more likely it's that they are strategizing together, right? And so they have a common game plan going in.
You'd think. You're full of crap.
But the Dodgers, though, what in the last, they got, you know, eliminated by the Diamondbacks. I mean, didn't like Betts and Freeman like barely hit at all?
All for the series.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you can like second guess Dave Roberts, and that's easy to armchair quarterback.
Well, but you saw the fatality rate when they kept making pitching changes and who they put where and why you're calling him in between his starts, and suddenly he's out of sync. Whether it's Kershaw, whether it's Max Scherzer, whether it was a gross overuse of Joe Kelly. Now, is that Dave Roberts? Is that the player not producing? Or is it the analytic memo from upstairs?
Yeah, all those analytic nerds, man, they're getting involved.
Don't hire anybody from Princeton. Next, social media sound off.
All right, let's talk here a little bit about hockey fighting. And this is from Ask Jim Anything. Disagree, Hacksaw. If you ban fighting, then you immediately put your greatest star's health at risk. These guys protect and enforce the unwritten rules of the game that make it so special.
Well, I don't think you're putting your guys at risk, because if you ban fighting, There's no reason to have some 6'5" pugilistic gold gloves guy on your roster, because you need quality players, because the other guys, 23 guys, have skaters who can score. You can't have your 24th or 23rd guy be just a fighter, because there's no reason to fight anymore. Now suddenly you're at a disadvantage. That's a philosophical thing about how the game has changed. The realistic, the medical aspect of the game, because I tweeted this out and I took a lot of crap from hockey fans, because there was a terrible brawl between the Flyers and the Rangers. And Matt Rempe, the rookie who came from the American Hockey League, picked four fights in his first six games, took a pounding. And I tweeted out after both these guys staggered after they hit punches in the face. I said, mark this date on your calendar. 10 years from today, these guys will be eligible for CTE brain damage, because the fights were vicious.
Yeah.
And there was no reason for it. I don't think in this day and age we need to have brawlers to sell the game of hockey. The game of hockey is phenomenal, whether it's Connor Bedard, Chicago Blackhawks, or it's the greatness of the future Hall of Famer Sidney Crosby, or what's going on in Edmonton with Connor McDavid. I just don't think we need brawls. And ask Jim anything, I'll tell Jim something. If you outlaw fighting, and accidents happen, guys get hit with high sticks, I understand that. But if you outlaw it, then you can't have a bunch of tough guys on your roster, because the other guy's got all skaters, and you'll be at a manpower disadvantage. At least that's my spin. I'll take a 2-minute slashing penalty for the commentary.
Yeah, it's just weird how fighting is accepted in hockey, you know, where in almost every other sport, they clamp down, they penalize guys, they, you know.
They ban it.
Yeah, so it's just nuts. And by the way, just ask Jim anything, talking about the unwritten rules.
Code.
I'm like so tired of the unwritten rules of all these different sports. There's rules, and if the rule doesn't apply, then, you know, the game should be played.
Well, I'm concerned about the health of the players.
Oh, yeah.
And that's trust me, that's a big issue. And I can't, Jim, I don't know what you know or think about Gary Bettman, but at the end of the day, I don't want to hear Gary Bettman's pronouncement that I don't think there's any linkage between fighting and concussions. And I don't see any data about concussions and CTE. Oh, my God, you go to Boston University and evaluate their reports, have done the autopsies on dead players. CTE is a real legitimate thing. Why do I want the next Bob Probert committing suicide on my watch, Detroit Red Wings tough guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, rejecting reality, you know? I mean, what are these guys thinking?
I'll take the 2-minute in the penalty box for roughing Ask Jim Anything. Next question.
All right, let's go, hear the Raiders. And this is from Captain Raider.
Do we have to?
Yeah. Rumor has it the Bears are set on Caleb and the Commanders are set on Daniels. So I believe we're going to go after Penix Jr., Nix, or JJ. I saw a rumor that Telesco really liked Bo Nix, but now that Russ has parted ways with Denver, I wouldn't be surprised if we sign him either. But yes, we definitely need a franchise quarterback.
Well, here's an idea. You could sign Russell Wilson, because you only cost you $1.5 million this year, but you'd have to commit $30 million next year probably, because that's the price tag he'll place on the second year. Broncos are paying the first year of the salary. You could then sit there at 13, and maybe you could take Bo Nix if they think he's got all the dynamics aside from being a game manager. Or you could take Penix. You could have Russell Wilson play 2 years and you develop the quarterback of the future. It's got to be the right guy. Maybe it's J.J. McCarthy, although my sentiment is he was surrounded by a lot of great people at Michigan. You know, he had power running games. He had beast in the offensive line, had a great defense. So he was not asked to win a ton of games. He was just asked to make some plays down the field after his teammates beat the crap out of Northwestern or Purdue or Indiana. So, you know, maybe you get Russell for one plus year, 2 years total, for $32 million total, and you take a quarterback, the best quarterback you think at 13.
So. Yeah, that just makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? You know, because you don't want to trade all that capital to move up to the top three. I mean, it seems like a rational thing for the Raiders to do, but they don't do the rational thing, so I don't know what's going to happen.
Raider Nation, thank you for being part in joining us here. Sound off on social media. Next question.
All right, we've got UCLA basketball here. This is from Greg. He says, these statements are uneducated and come at the turning point of the season. UCLA may not be a tournament team, but they play hard. And while they lack a go-to stud, nobody wants to play them. Cronin, again, is proving to be a top six coach in D1. His players love him, and he loves them back. Note the lack of transfers and relative lack of early NBA defections. You have a right to your opinions, even if they're wrong.
No, you can't steal my verbiage. You can't flip that on me. End of the day, great coach. Accomplishments at the University of Cincinnati, phenomenal. What he did early on, UCLA. But I just don't think you can bash your players in public three times in a span of 8 weeks and not think it does damage. Damage to those players, damage to the guys you're trying to recruit,
yeah,
whose parents will say, wait a minute, we're going to go here. He didn't do a good job. And he hammered these guys. He threw my kids under the bus. So I just don't understand Mick's rationale. And as John said, you support your players publicly. You work really hard behind closed doors.
Yes.
And if you got to bang them, you bang them privately. And I just don't understand this. Keep looking for this. What happens as soon as this season is over? Do a bunch of the Euros go into the transfer portal? Does somebody go home?
Mm.
That's a big issue. And at the end of the day, Mick Cronin, you recruited these guys. You signed these guys. You're supposed to develop these guys. And you're bashing these guys? What kind of way is that to do business?
Yeah, well, maybe Mick Cronin doesn't want to be a CEO either, you know, of his program. But top six D1 coach? I mean, come on. I mean, he's good, but he's not that good.
Well, he's good. What he did at UC with no resources was absolutely phenomenal. And he kind of hit the floor running, inherited some players, had a couple of really good seasons at UCLA. But where you are right now, we'll see where they're going to be going forward, because I wonder if there's going to be some fallout at the end of the day because of how he acted.
Yeah, how he acted. Okay, let's go Padre talk here. And this is from Ray, and he says, sending Merrill down to the minors after not signing anyone this offseason and then giving the job to a career bench player like Azokar would be a huge slap in the face to the fans. No way they do this.
Well, I would think he's going to be on the 31 that's going to Seoul, South Korea when they leave next on this coming Wednesday. And I think he might be their opening day. Now, whether he survives or not, he's playing legitimate defense. We've got to see once they start throwing for real, because I'll tell you, the intensity level and the quality of pitches he faces opening day against the Dodgers is a lot different than what he's getting in spring training right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's hit. He's swinging at, I think, 271, 260, playing a really good defensive center field. But opening day, major league pitching, aces, it's a little bit different environment. You could start him here, play and see how he does. And if he gets his shows signs that he's overwhelmed, you send him to El Paso, because you do want him to play every day mm-hmm. at El Paso. You don't want to have a situation where he can't handle pitching, we'll sit him on the bench. That doesn't help him. But he's, as I told John, I think there have been a lot of pleasant surprises. How he's played is okay. And, you know, you're gonna have to argue with me that Azokar is a 280 major league hitter. Maybe I don't want my center fielder hitting 220. We just visited all that with Trent Grisham. You know, if we're gonna go a chunk of the season with Azokar and the light hitting Profar as two of my starting three outfielders, that's too many holes in the lineup.
Yeah.
Because we already got question marks either at first base or in the DH slot. But things change. Guys are still out there. Short-term one-year rentals, but the kid's been impressive.
Yeah, he has. And you know, about a week and a half ago, you were saying they should send him to the minors. But I think in the last 7 to 10 days, he's showing something. Hey, did you see him throw out that guy at home plate?
He's played really well defensively.
Yeah. And you know, I think he's a kid. We can root for him. Maybe it's like another Tatis situation when he started. Maybe.
I hope he's not hitting 171 come May 1st, because then you're going to have a lot to answer for.
Yeah, well, that's better than Austin Nola. That's better than Grisham.
Okay, a couple more here on social media before we wrap this up.
All right, let's go here. And okay, we got to talk about our good friend Trevor Bauer. This is from Silent and says, Bauer would be difficult to market, but I can't help but feel bad for the guy because he served a sentence despite his innocence. And understanding his past and moving forward to see Bauer be dominant again would be great. Bauer's willingness to put it all on the line should speak volumes about his willingness to cooperate so he can do what he loves again.
I think the only problem I have with Bauer, aside from his social misconduct, is just his defiance. his defiance across the board has been consistent, that I did nothing wrong. Well, it's not a hell of a lot of people I know in society would act the way he acted towards women, not one, but four, because this happened in Cleveland, this happened in Cincinnati. It's a big issue, and it's tough. How you're correct, Silent One, is how do you market to your fans that this guy is part of your team? What does he represent? Unless Bauer comes in and Bauer says, I was wrong, and Bauer does not do any junk on social media. But that's not him. He's always doing this.
Yeah,
he's always doing this with the cell phone. So I don't know. Can you put the parameters around? Nobody would touch him right now. He's still kind of radioactive.
He is radioactive. But I agree. I think the guy deserves another chance, a second chance or third chance, whatever it turns out to be. But I don't know. It's frustrating because on one level, you know, all this nonsense off the field, you know, that has an impact on the team and their brand image. But you typically don't want to have to judge people for what they do off the field. But in this case, though, the most recent case of the woman, he was set up. I mean, the dude was set up, and we have to give him a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt, I think.
He was stupid.
He was stupid.
You're a public figure. You're making mega money. Why would you ever expose yourself to something like that?
Yeah, but, you know, it's off the field. You got to judge him when he's on the field. If I were king, you like to say that, I would sign him, especially if you're the Padres, and get him on a minimum salary with some incentives. Yeah, it's nothing but upside.
Your wife's going to be walking down the hallway here and want an explanation why you would have him represent her favorite team.
Yeah, well, you know, morality has been shifting lately in the world here, both in the sports and elsewhere.
Defiance. He served 394 games, actually served 194 games. He paid his price. Okay. Last question of the day before they cancel our podcast.
All right, here. We go talk about the San Francisco Giants here. Here we go. Hope Springs Eternal says, Zaidi of the Giants does these opt-outs all the time. But look at Zaidi's record. He's only has one winning season in the five full years he's been with them.
Well, the one that was at 107 games, that one mystical year.
Yeah, that was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, it came together. They rented all these free agents, and these guys stayed healthy, and it came together. And they tried to duplicate it the second year, and didn't happen. Then the third year last year didn't happen. And now their team's gotten old, and they got injuries, and, you know, they said goodbye to a really good guy, Brandon Crawford, whose Father Time has knocked on his door and is collecting tolls. Now, he was pretty active. He got Matt Clement on an opt-out deal, you know, and he's obviously signed to the great young Japanese sensation, the outfielder Lee, and we'll see how good he's going to be. And they went out and got Soler, who hit 36 home runs in San Francisco, though he only hit 236 and he strikes out a lot. So, they've had real bad injuries. I mean, in spring training, they've lost one of their starting pitchers for the year, blood clot surgery in his shoulder. They're just really wafer thin on the mound, and we'll see if these guys can hit. But to me, the jury is still out on him as a general manager. He came with accolades because he worked for the Dodgers and Andrew Friedman, went to Frisco, and voila, they had the 107-win season, and they haven't done anything since that point in time. So I agree with you that this might be a troubled year. If this doesn't work in Frisco, their attendance is way down. Their season tickets are way down.
Well, remember, they sold out like a million games in a row.
AKA the Barry Bonds era.
Yeah.
And that's an argument to a different level.
And also the Evanier's World Series.
Sure, with Bochy.
Yeah, 10, 12, and 14. And I remember my buddy up in San Francisco, he said, you know, it's hard to get tickets, you know, because it's always sold out. You have to go in the aftermarket.
Not right now.
But not now. So it seems like the Giants fans, you know, they've had they've been blessed with a lot of success over the last 20 years.
Past tense.
But, yeah, so I think the fans want a winner. And if they're going to make investment, you know, go out for these free agents, I mean, Snell would look good in black and orange.
Be the front of that rotation in front of Logan Webb, who's a really good pitcher.
Yeah.
But they're just wafer thin. And pitches, you're going to have guys break down. This is absurd for me to bring this up. You signed Snell. You signed Bauer. Now you've changed the whole scope of your pitching staff, right?
Oh, big time. Yeah. I mean, that'd be something if the two of them went to one team, whether it's San Francisco or Anaheim.
Okay, that's where we are. Hey, listen, we hope you have enjoyed our Monday bonus podcast brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. From cataracts to glaucoma, to cornea issues, extensive screening, programs for all ages, and vision tests. We all need help with our eyes. When that time comes, go to North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. And by Dixie Line Lumber Centers, 9 locations, 100 years of experience. You got projects, Dixie Line Lumber, the place to go. John, we'll be back at it come Thursday. We're doing something really different Thursday. John's going to spring training. Drink a few beers with the boys.
Yeah.
He's going to go to the Padres camp, and he's going to the Dodger camp. He might even show up at Diablo Stadium in Tempe to watch the Angels. So we're going to do our Thursday podcast with John on the road as our baseball correspondent. You do have the chance to be out in left field officially.
Yeah, well, you know, we're doing a couple of games in Peoria, and then we're going to go to Vegas for the Mountain West Conference Tournament. So I think by Thursday, I'm going to be in Vegas. But, I mean, March, isn't March a great sports month?
Oh, sure.
I mean, we were getting into, like, auto racing and the NHL trade deadline. I mean, it's not just basketball and spring training.
Hope you've enjoyed our podcast. We're here Mondays at 1, Thursdays at 1. Please give us a thumbs up, give us a 5-star rating, and share with all your friends who we are and what we do. And thank you for being part of Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.